B-Pod Studios.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
This is the home of the Bruins and the Celtics.
It is nothing but a thrill a minute.
And these guys.
Oh, my Lord, what could come next?
Dutcher and Rich on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hulk Hogan, Hollywood Hulkster, whatever they call you. I'm coming after you, you coward.
This is actually not that bad.
He doesn't sound too much different than like the guys from Onyx.
When he uses tendencies as a rhyme. He's referring to Hulk Hogan as gay. But he calls him a ballerina, and he goes, "I always knew you had those tendons." I wonder who Ghost wrote that for Randy Mosley.
Well, I know that's
not that bad.
Esoteric Ghost wrote for John Cena when he did his rap career, as a matter of fact. But he's got like a distinct voice, not bad flow from Macho Man Randy Savage.
I just expected more of a "I'm a Real American" thing from him, and then when I heard that it was actual diss track where he was calling them light in the loafers, which nowadays is not, you should not do that, ladies and gentlemen. You should not. That is not an insult to someone. But back then, when it was, I thought it was much better than I expected.
Well, we are doing songs about real people, and that is, of course, Macho Man Randy Savage's song, "Be a Man," which is the name of the actual song, Fred, to go along with your observations and about the Hulk Hogan and their rivalry at the time.
I was on a plane with Randy the Macho Man Savage. We were flying from Jacksonville, and I still don't know how he accomplished this, but it was a flight from Jacksonville to Atlanta. It wasn't a very large plane, but it was, like a commercial airline. And he was in first class. He boarded the plane, obviously, before we did. I didn't see him get on the plane. And when we came on the plane, he had six Amstel lights in front of him and chugged them all. And we were in the first row of coach. And he drank the six Amstel lights before we took off. And they brought six more out for him. And he drank those. He had 12 Amstel, around 12 Amstel lights before we took off. Which even back then, I mean, you're flying on a little tiny like half hour flight, and even though you're flying first class, the flight attendants knocked out 12 bottles for you to start before the flight even takes off.
Take COVID out of it. Do you think that at a normal, like nowadays, there's some sort of regulation where there's no way possible that anyone on a flight, no matter what ticket you have, could be given 12 beers before the flight takes off?
Yes, I don't think they would do that.
No, there's no way. There's got to be some sort of regulation on that, even if you are like a big-ass wrestler.
But just like laziness, too. I don't know. I don't know if there's a regulation about how much you can drink because, you could just go, I'm not flying the plane and I'm not driving when I get out of here. But, and if you're in first class, but first class on domestic flights, isn't like that anymore. Like first class on domestic flights, it's not much different. It's basically more leg room than coach, and you do get free drinks, but it's not like they're constantly coming out going, "So would you like another cocktail?" I mean, they come up to you like once,
and they're not going to give you more than like, here's what's happened. You order your drink, and maybe if you ask for a second one, they'll give it to you.
Well, you can order more than one drink at a time. I mean, I've ordered
for yourself.
Yeah, I've ordered like four drinks, like four of those airplane bottles before at a time, and then had them come back and get four more. But that's over the course of a flight.
Yeah.
But you said before the flight. No.
Yeah. Yeah.
No. They would have to like you. I mean, they would just have to know you and like you.
Well,
I mean,
maybe they were. Maybe Sarge was the flight attendant.
Hey, yeah, everybody. Maybe Sarge here. Welcome. I'll be entertaining you throughout the whole proceedings.
He would like take the microphone and just not stop. He's like talking to the passengers on the airplane like seven times during
a half-hour
flight.
We have a true WWF legend with us today.
Savage is a weird-looking dude without his Oakley blades and his do-rag on.
I was just going to ask. Okay. He might have had the blades on, but what was he wearing? I always imagined Macho Man with the boa and all that stuff. What was he wearing?
He had the do-rag and sunglasses on.
Okay.
Oh, he did. All right.
Yeah. He was running. It was Randy the Macho Man.
Oh, okay.
Put it this way:
there was no guesswork.
Okay,
he was in the first Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movie. I don't know if you saw it, but I mean, it was like, you know, he had to wrestle him in the ring when he was learning how to be Spider-Man.
That's right. That's
and
right.
I didn't realize it was him at first because I'm like, he just looks. You always see him with the blades and the thing on, but he's a weird looking dude with all that gone. Like, he's a strange looking gentleman.
Well, I mean, they filled their bodies, especially back then, with so much stuff.
Oh my God, Fred, we saw all of them. I mean, you and I worked. I mean, we worked right in the headquarters of WCW. I told you my wife, you know, went and interviewed for a job at the power plant. Like, she was going to work in like the corporate office of where all these guys used to train and where, you know, it wasn't Vince. I forgot who the head of the WCW was. But I mean, at one point, all of those guys, Fred, we came across all of them. And there was Big Papa Pump. There was Buff Bagwell. And you want to talk about the era where it ain't nothing like today, where half these wrestlers don't even look like wrestlers. These guys were monsters, like steroids galore by the handful.
I've told you this story before, but and Rich was there. It was he was doing something different than me, though. It was a celebrity softball game.
Yep,
at Turner Field, where the Braves used to play, where they should still be playing. Yeah. And Goldberg was on my team, and Crash was on my team, and Crash had brought, like, you know, a 12-pack of beer. And Goldberg goes, can I have one? First of all, Goldberg, who went out, tried to plow my wife, he wanted to bang my wife, sent her flowers. She didn't want to. She didn't like that he drove a pickup truck. That's what she told me. Mm. And so he goes, can I have a beer? And we go, yeah, sure. And he took out of his pocket two pills, the largest pills I've ever seen in my entire life.
Just like horse pills.
Yeah, popped them in his mouth and drank the beer in like 1 second. Like, and he wasn't, and he... And it wasn't like he was like, hey, dudes, let's party. He was just like, hey, do you mind if I have a beer? And we're like, sure. And he just took the pills and drank the beer and was like, thanks.
I've never seen people with redder skin in my life.
That was Buff Bagwell, yeah.
Buff Bagwell, like, had, like, he was a lobster. Like, he had red skin that it, like, glowed, and it was, like, glistening red skin.
So they had batting practice beforehand if you wanted to take it, and Goldberg went out there, and this is a softball. Like the, you know, they don't travel as far. And he was ripping balls into the left field, like hitting off the upper deck. I mean, he was hitting softballs that far.
Jeez, man.
He's the largest, like, in-shape human being I've ever seen.
Which one?
Goldberg.
Scott Steiner, Big Papa Pump was bigger.
I don't think I ever met Big Papa Pump.
Big Papa Pump.
How tall was he?
He was pretty tall. I mean, he was maybe like 6'2",
See, Goldberg's like 6'5", and like he was almost... I know Big Papa Pump had the weird muscles on top of
muscles. Well, the
muscles,
I mean, you've seen it. It's a muscle on top of a muscle. It looks like a Popeye cartoon. You know when he would flex and like a pile of muscles would go up? It's grotesque. It looked like a growth on top of his bicep. It was a second bicep. He was so... beefed up, however, you know, whether it was chemically enhanced or not, that's for you to decide.
It's just like Goldberg looked like a football player, like the world's largest football player. He looked like an athlete, but he was just giant. No fat on him, just giant. But the things those guys put in their bodies, hachi machi.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, just the idea that you could have six beers before a morning flight, before the plane takes off, and then you know you got to go work out that day. Like, how the hell are they doing that? They're going to the gym. Like, you hear these Ric Flair stories, and you're like, the dude's huge. Like, you can take all the steroids of the world. If you don't work out, you're not going to get that big.
Yeah.
So, like, how's he working out? Like, the guy's having, like, 45 drinks every night and then go, like, literally 45 drinks every night. doing blow and then waking up and going and working out?
I had a buddy who worked out at the same gym that all these guys worked out at.
I know it was the
Main Event Fitness.
The Henry gym, the bodybuilder, the...
Oh, Hank Haney?
Hank Haney. That wasn't his gym?
No, it wasn't, but I mean, I know the one you're talking about. Yeah, they used to work out there, but there was one right next to the power plant. And my friend was, you know, built like me. And then 6 months later, that dude was like jacked. Mm. And it wasn't because he was just going to that gym. I think it was because he became friends with all these guys and knew how to become jacked man within 6 months fairly quickly.
Yeah. But you still got to lift, and those guys had such dependent chemical dependencies. I don't know how they lifted that much.
Well, I think it's because they had the chemicals to help them lift that much.
Yeah, but
I mean, dude, I mean,
you're going in drunk. I don't know.
Look at pictures from like early 2000 wrestling, like WCW, WWE. Yeah. Like, take a look. I mean, it was a steroid free.
They were all Adonises. But only one could truly be described as ravishing.
And that Rick Rude, he was ravishing.
Rick Rude, he was ravishing.
Yeah,
he was chiseled from Zeus himself. He would take out his robe off his robe and just like Grease Lightning, you know what the chicks would do in their pants. Just like Grease Lightning.
I get it.
Yes, they would. That's what the chicks would do.
It's a pretty good reference there, James Stewart.
Someone would scream, I can't remember who, and then the chicks would, you know. It rhymes with scream. That was on the other day. Grease. They didn't take out that part. They took out everything else.
It was on free TV, and they didn't take it out.
My two older brothers, for a Catholic school talent show, when they were in like third and fourth grade, did Grease Lightning, and nothing was edited out. And you know it ain't blank when you're getting lots of blank, and the chicks will brrr, like that's all in the song, and nobody at the time even cared. Everyone just snapped along because it was Grease.
They said the S word.
Oh, yeah. You know it ain't blank when you're getting lots of blank. Grease Lightning, yes.
Well, that's
you know it
the
ain't
T
S
word.
When you're getting lots. You know it ain't S when you're getting lots of T. They both rhyme.
Oh, okay. That's the rhyme.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I didn't even know what he was saying with the T word when I was a kid. I just know he said the S word.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. You know it ain't S when you're getting lots of T's.
I love musical theater. All right. Yeah, I watched, but Grease Lightning always makes me laugh. But they took out all that line with the chicks. I don't even know if you can say it on the radio, but that always makes me laugh. That scene, because you know that's all that all Travolta wanted was just the chicks to get super into him. That's all he wanted.
John Travolta, that movie, I swear to God, like that was one of the, I don't know, it was one of those things where, how did that get so far into the public consciousness? Like, that was like the biggest movie in the world for about like 10 years.
Oh, yeah, forever.
Grease.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Got Jeff Conaway Taxi, correct?
Probably.
Yeah. I mean, that was Travolta's first.
That was right after he left Cotter, correct?
No,
was that during
Staying Alive? I thought was before that.
Staying Alive was 79.
No, Staying Alive. I thought it was earlier.
Saturday Night Fever was first.
Yeah, that's Saturday what I mean. I mean Saturday Night Fever. Yeah,
Saturday
Night
Fever, which is hysterical.
It was 77.
Yeah, looking back on it, it was. Yes,
Saturday Night Fever was 77.
That was during Cotter,
and Grease was 78. So,
okay. they were both during Cotter.
So he left Cotter while it was still on. But you can tell if you watch. Boy, we are really whatever. It's summer,
but we're gonna be talking about the Patriots all morning long.
But here and there. I mean, I can't do it all for 4 hours. There's not that much to talk about. But the if you watch Welcome Back, Cotter, like I bought the first season of it.
Oh,
like it's good.
Really?
Yeah, it's a good show.
But shows like that, and Travolta was on, what, two, three seasons? Whatever it was.
I just have the first season, but, I mean, Travolta's a star.
No, but, I mean, what I'm saying is shows like that sometimes take a while to work themselves into the sweet spot.
It's not, you know, I'm not watching it, like, doubled over in laughter, but, I mean, it's a pretty good show. But that guy, I mean, he doesn't barely have any lines, and that guy is the star of that thing.
What?
When
they do the talent show and he does ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-barino.
There was three do's and a don't. Remember that?
Yeah.
Yep.
He's
That's right.
What happened to Horshack? Where did, whatever happened to him?
Ron Palillo, actually, I can tell you what. I know exactly what happened to Arnold.
He was at the Wallach family reunion.
Thank you.
He's very bitter.
You mean Uncle Ron?
He's very bitter. He's not a happy man.
Ron's one claim to fame was he was in the first ever episode of the A-Team.
Really?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
And okay. Epstein was going to be in it, but he had a note from his mother.
That's right.
Signed.
Three do's and a don't. I never thought you'd get that. That's pretty good.
There you go.
Yep.
All right. We will talk about the Patriots. We'll talk to Jim McBride, who covers the team. He was there last night. We'll talk about Mac Jones' fever and this Judon signing for at least a series. He was doing everything. We'll talk
Monster.
About we'll talk about all of that.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Details.
Get out of here. Come on. Don't listen to them.
Listen to no one.
Don't listen to them. You're going to ruin your career.
Treacher and Rich.
You can't listen to those people. They're maniacs.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Jake Bailey. Now in his third season. Early movement. And that won't sit well.
Well, there's the message. I use the same stuff when, you know, we're coaching my kids' Pop Warner team. You got to hold your water.
Five, the Sports Sub. We're Toucher and Rich.
Who is this?
No Effects. Jeff wears Birkenstocks. It's in Decent Drugs, Stinky People. Give you hugs, walk around in your bare feet.
And who's the Jeff that they're referring to? Because I know we're doing Real People songs.
Some hippie that wears Birkenstocks that they know. So it's a real person.
Just a guy named Jeff.
Jeff, don't wear regular shoes. Hey, Fat Mike, I got to let you know it's not the Tunes. It's their live shows and all the people you get to meet. How many Grateful Dead fans say it's not the Tunes? It's the live shows, man. It's not the music that this band is making. It's the live shows. Plenty of good vibes and decent drugs to keep people give you hugs. There you go. It's no Macho Man, but I'm trying my best. Jim McBride covers the Patriots, who played last evening in front of a crowd for the first time in 7,000 days. And he writes for the Boston Globe. He joins us in the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Mr. McBride, hello, sir.
Good morning. How's everybody today?
Doing well. Everyone has got Mac Jones fever. And just real plainly, give us your critique of the two quarterbacks besides Hoyer that played last night.
Well, first of all, I'd like to say I have Randy Savage fever. I'm hoping to achieve that flight status this year on a few airlines.
Would they give you six Amstels and then six again before you take off?
Absolutely.
Yeah, start kicking some ass in the squared circle, my friend. That's reserved for those people.
Yeah, I thought the quarterbacks, you know, it was kind of a continuation of what we've seen in camp the last couple of weeks, you know, or last, you know, half dozen practices or so, where, Cam's been taking the first reps, and he did again last night, but Mac's been getting the bulk of the reps. And, you know, I thought Mac Jones was outstanding, especially in that first drive of the second half where, you know, they didn't get a chance to run the two-minute offense at the end of the first half, so they came out and ran it at the beginning of the third quarter, and he really showed all his skills in that drill. You know, eight straight passes complete. You know, he was in command. He was cool. He played with tempo. He played with precision. You know, and I think that's what he's really been showing the last, you know, half dozen or so practices at training camp, where he's really been on the rise. You know, it's clearly still Cam's team right now. He's the starter, but Mac's coming.
All right, how does that translate to the beginning of the season? Do you think Cam is entrenched as the opening day starter?
Yeah, I do. I think it would take, you know, something strange to happen for him not to be the starter. Bill's been pretty consistent with that, even, you know, starting with the night that they drafted Mac, when he, you know, went out of his way to say Cam's still our starter, and he said it again this year in camp. You know, and it's been reflected in practices. Cam has been taking the first team reps, or the first guy to go with the first team reps. And he did last night. He started the game. So I think that, you know, they're simultaneously getting ready for the season with Cam as the starter, but also getting Mac ready to be the future.
What's it going to take for that to change? Like, is there anything that you believe could happen in the preseason that would alter that course? Because, I mean, I think that I agree with you. It just seems like they're on a course to start Cam Newton, despite what our eyes are seeing here in the preseason. Is there anything that could happen over the next two games, other than injury, that you think could alter that?
Yeah, I mean, I think a really flat or terrible performance by Cam in one of these two preseason games, or even in the practices, you know, against the joint practices will tell us a lot against the Eagles and the Giants. You know, in past years, the starters have gotten the bulk of the reps during those practices, and then not so much during the games. That might be different this year, where there's only three games, but maybe a really flat performance against the Giants in the joint practices, and then another bad performance against them. You know, maybe they think, yeah, it's max time, but you know, or barring an injury, you know, that can always change things. But I think right now, it would take, you know, something really strange to happen for Cam not to be the starter on week one against the Dolphins.
Well, let's go back to what you just talked about, Jim. How different do you think Bill Belichick will play out exhibition games 2 and 3 with the joint workouts, specifically because there's one fewer exhibition game this year?
Yeah, I think against Philadelphia, Monday, Tuesday, they have joint practices. You know, at least one of them will be padded. You know, then they have a day off Wednesday. I think that a lot of the starters will still play against the Eagles a week from, on Thursday, which in past they haven't really played the starters. I remember up in Detroit or in Nashville 2 years ago, both those times the practices were really geared towards the starters, getting the starters ready, and then the game time came and we saw the second and third stringers. I don't think they'll do that against the Eagles just because there's one less game. I think they'll get a lot of the snaps against the Eagles. But then when they get to the Giants, those will probably be very active practices again, but they probably won't play those starters against the Giants very much, just because, you know, it's that last game and you don't want to get someone hurt in a game like that when the season is that close. So this week will be different than past years, but I think the final preseason game, even though it's only the third, will be treated much like it has in the past when there were four.
So, Jim, it's tough to take a lot out of big plays that happen in the fourth quarters of preseason games. But I mean, Ramondre Stevenson, that was obviously a cool moment yesterday. He scored the two touchdowns on the team. What have you seen from him at camp, and what do you believe he can be this season with the Patriots when the games are real?
Yeah, it's funny. You know, he's really been kind of an under the radar standout at camp. And then we talked to Ivan Fears, the running backs coach, last week, I think it was, and we were asking him about him, and, you know, he kind of gave a tough review. He said, well, you know, I'm glad he's here, but that's about it. He's got a lot of work to do. So we're like, well, maybe we're not seeing what he's seeing him. We're, you know, obviously not coaches, but, you know, he's so big. He looks like a fullback, but he runs like a tailback. When he was running down the sideline during that late touchdown last night, we hadn't seen anything like that in camp. He's usually been used in, you know, short yarded situation. He kind of pushed the pile guy. But this running back room is very, very deep. I mean, they're going to be able to run the ball behind that offensive line.
J.J. Taylor, that I love the little backs that can mm-hmm. put their head down,
catch the ball,
make contact. Deion Lewis out of Pittsburgh. I loved him. Everyone mocked me, and then he came here.
He's kind of been the forgotten man at camp this year because there's so many guys ahead of him on the depth chart. And then, of course, you draft a rookie in the fourth round. You're not going to cut him. But He showed his value last night as a pass catcher and as a runner and on special teams. So he's going to be a tough guy to get rid of, even though that room is stacked. It'll be interesting to see how that shakes out. I mean, there's Damian Harris and James White at the top of the depth chart, but the Sony Michel is still there.
Yes, he's sticking around.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Is Sony Michel guaranteed a spot on this team?
I don't know. He seems like a candidate for a trade possibility at the end of camp, just because there's only so many roster spots to go around, and he's in the last year of his contract. And, you know, as camp goes on throughout the league, you know, running backs start to go down because there's more hitting. He might be a candidate for a trade, I would think.
All right, Jim, obviously Stephon Gilmore is still in limbo. He didn't play last night. How do you think Jalen Mills looked last night without Gilmore in there to help him out?
Yeah, I thought Jalen's played really well throughout camp. I thought he was fine last night. You know, he's obviously hasn't played corner in a year or so because they used him mostly at safety for the Eagles. But, you know, he's been pretty much running that perimeter corner the entire camp, and he's held up well. You know, now the defense is kind of limited in camp because they can't really kill guys only on certain days, and they kind of protect those receivers. But I thought he played fine. I don't know if you want to open the season with him as perimeter corner when, you know, he's much more suited to kind of that hybrid role like Patrick Chung played. But I think so far he's acquitted himself well. And I do think the Stephon Gilmore situation will get, you know, there'll be a settlement to that at some point before the regular season starts. I think that the sides will get together because this defense is too good to not, you know, retain your best defensive player.
Burt Breer thinks that Gilmore has the upper hand in these negotiations right now because they need him to play. They need him to play in the preseason, and that they need to get this done more quickly. Do you agree with that sentiment?
No, I don't think so because he can come in at any point and play. He's always in, you know, he's still rehabbing, but he knows this defense, like the back of his hand. I mean, he's been here enough and he's a one-on-one guy. You know, he's a guy that you just stick on the number one receiver on the other side. So I don't know how much, you know, scheme he has to learn because it's not that much different for him as a perimeter corner. So, you know, certainly, if they go another week and he's not there, then time becomes, you know, of the essence. But I'm not sure either side has the upper hand right now.
All right. Well, there you go. Jim McBride, at one point was one of the Revolutionary War soldiers who shot the guns, and then they found him and they asked him to write for the Boston Globe.
How about you mean that?
The guy in the sidelines, yes.
I didn't know that.
Story.
It's absolutely true. He was one of those guys on the sidelines. And
good for you, Jim.
The next thing you know, they liked his analysis. He would talk to Bill coming off the field, and then they hired him. Jim McBride, read him in the Boston Globe. Thank you for the time, sir.
Thanks, guys. Have a good weekend.
All right,
see you, Jim.
Thank you. If we can find that audio, if we tape the game, it's in the second half when Scott has got a little thing going with those dudes dressed as the Revolutionary War guys, and Sosie's leaving them high and dry.
Well, yeah, Scott's kind of riffing, kind of having some fun, joking around.
It was a decent premise, too, and Sosie just leaves him high and dry. Just leaves him high and dry. Now, he's probably getting information in his ear and stuff, but nonetheless, I mean, like, at least play the straight man to Scott's joker there. All right, we'll return. Here are the headlines.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
It's like they're all on laughing gas.
It's Tusher and Rich.
It's slow.
Yeah, everything's in slow motion.
On Boston's home for sports.
These are the kind of people that take snoozes under trees.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Little kids, everywhere I turn, I can see them. little kids, night and day I eat, sleep, and breathe them. I'm a very single woman, no income. I'd like to raise a giant family, but I'll admit my life's been. I hope I make the mother of the year. Some women get pregnant with triplets. Some women get pregnant with twins. Lucky me, look at what I'm pregnant with. Octuplets.
And there you go.
It's I'm songs so happy. Thank
about
you.
Real people.
It's awesome.
And that is John's pick.
Yeah.
Which is not hard. That's not easy to find. That is a.
That's off his greatest hits album.
That's
right?
A pre 2009. That is not in any computer system here.
Octuplets.
Mike Lockhart had to really bust his ass.
Thank
for you.
You, Mike. I appreciate
yep.
it.
To get
thank
octuplets. You. Lucky me, lucky me. He is no fan of mine, Mike, behind the Mike Callahan.
So, remind me again why he doesn't like you?
There was a theory, but I don't, that I said something, but I don't think it's something that I would say. And so, but I just know that I can't say, you know, for sure it was him. But it is, the evidence leads to it was him. There was some parody account of me that was like Rehab Fred or something. That one day, just one day, was saying all these nasty things about me on Twitter, and I looked at the account, and it was followed by one person, it was following one person, and that was one Mike behind the Mike Callahan.
Oh, that's a problem.
So unless okay. someone was trying to get me off their scent, I'm guessing it was Mike behind the Mike Callahan. But
well, you know, I sent him an email after you said that there was some sort of tension between the two of you, and I think this is when the Bruins were still in the playoffs, and I was like, you know, can you... Is this true? And he goes, no. When I get back from vacation, when he was on vacation at the time, I will write a Bruins song and send it to you. And then the Bruins got bounced from the playoffs, and I never heard anything back after that. So I don't know. I mean, he said he doesn't hate you.
Well, Zolak is a huge fan of Mike behind the Mike Callahan.
And of course he is.
And is evidenced by the amount of... So every time Mike goes on vacation, I get texted from Scott. And Mike has become, and Adam 12 is a big fan of Mike behind the Mike Callahan. And there was an oldies station here. I don't remember it, but Mike has become like the purveyor, the historian of this oldies station. And he walks around with their memorabilia on, and he has taken to the internet to carry on their legacy. So that is where his interests lie now. So, he's got his own radio station to worry about. He doesn't need to worry
Hernandez
about us.
Hernandez goes in for the touchdown.
No, he's short. No, there's he's the short. Zolak. Damn, what are you looking at?
That's when Zolak and Mike behind the mic did play-by-play together.
Yeah, apparently that's a lot how that sounds like Zolak coaching Pop Warner. That is...
Yeah, he went on a little bit about that last night.
And apparently that's all true. By the way, I was sent this article by Mike Lockhart.
Yes,
and it's someone who is powerless over their addiction. Addiction is very real. It's someone who had lost power. They were addicted to something, and I will tell you this. It goes. It's by this woman Abby Ellen, and it's in the New York Times. The New York Times felt. This was needed to be discussed. She said, after I discovered Diet Coke in 1982, I drank at least 3 to 4 12-ounce cans nearly every day for the next 4 decades, no matter where in the world I was.
Wow. Okay.
And then she says that she had to quit because the left side of her abdomen had been throbbing for months, and the doctors were unable to figure out the problem. CT scans, ultrasounds, and a colonoscopy turned up nothing. And around the same time, she began noticing that the Diet Coke was starting to taste what she imagined a Tide Pod would taste like. And then she said she could imagine the chemicals swirling around my stomach, targeting my insides. I wonder, could there be a link? And then she goes through it, talking to other people that dare to consume 3 to 4 cans of Diet Coke a day. And to that I would say, you know why the doctors found nothing? Because there's nothing. And then also another thing is, you realize, like, people are like, oh, there's, first of all, you got to calm down about everything that you, there's, if you're functioning and you're going about your day-to-day life and you like something that might not be the best for you, it's fine. You're allowed one vice. Now with all this information, everything is overanalyzed. I got news for you. Before there was Diet Coke, what was the average age that people lived to? 68? 70? Not even. If Diet Coke's and all these chemicals are killing so many people, why is everyone living 20 years longer than they were before it existed?
Advancement in medicine.
Yeah, well, good. So medicine is even things out. So you're saying people would have been dying at 40 if you had 3 cans of Diet Coke a day? Something is going to kill you. Something is going to kill you. You are going to die. All of us are going to die. But I'll tell you what, you're not going to enjoy your life at all if all you do is sit around and analyze every single thing. 3 cans of Diet Coke a day, relax. First of all, she goes into nothing else about her diet, but she just has to besmirch the DCs. And she says the caffeine and the sweetness to the DCs, which I'm chugging down right now, that Diet Coke makes them addictive on purpose. To which I would say, no kidding. You think the company makes something? Yes, they would like you to have it more than once. The goal of companies is not, hey, you know what? Let's have them knock down one of these and just say, let's call it a day.
I worked with a guy who every morning, you know, when I worked on a show with him, knocked out, I think, almost a 6-pack a morning of Diet Coke. Like, I would say one before he went on the air, one each hour, and then most of the time he'd have one after the show was done.
All right.
So, yeah, almost 5 to 6 Diet Cokes a morning.
I give you Mike Francesa, who is almost 70 years old.
The Diet Coke Pope.
Guy's going to live forever.
I mean, he's not going to live forever, John, but he is going to.
Is he a celestial? Is he like, you know, one of the immortals?
I just like, this woman has studied. You know, I'm one of these immortals, they talk about dying, but, you know, I was in the car with Juan the other day. He was driving me around and I said, he goes, hey, you're immortal. And I feel like I could just drive the car into traffic. But the thing is that, like, oh, my stomach hurts. Well, what am I doing in my life? Let me review everything. Ah, Diet Coke is the culprit. Even though the doctors cannot give, she has no concrete piece of evidence. If these chemicals are so terrible, so just drink water the rest. Just drink water and eat Brussels sprouts the rest of your life.
I think there's plenty of evidence that it's not the best thing in the world.
It's not the best thing in the world for you, but it's not. But it's not going to be the thing that kills you at 60. That I'll tell you. That it's not going to be the thing that kicks you. Because your friend, I know, the guy you worked with, died.
Before 60.
Yes. But what else did he do?
I mean, like what his vices
smoked.
Were?
He smoked.
He did smoke.
He drank. He smoked.
He wasn't like a big drinker.
No, but he drank and he smoked. And he did. He smoked.
Yeah. He did smoke. He smoked a lot.
Smoking is going to kill you at an early age, most likely. That you're really rolling the dice with. Diet Coke, I think you're okay. And the New York Times felt that was fit to print. 3 cans of Diet Coke a day. 3 cans. And she's talking about how difficult it was to quit. Well, because it's probably, it sounds like it's the only pleasure in your life that you're giving yourself. I got to get a look at this woman. I got to see her weight. I got to see if Diet Coke is the only.
There was eating involved?
Yeah, I got to see what Abby. If Abby Ellen is like a marathon runner or something, then I'll hand it to her. Even though that's terrible for you, too. If you're running a bunch of marathons, that's about as bad a thing as you can do to your body. Oh, she's fine. Abby Ellen's fine. She's worried about everything. Diet Coke addiction. Oh, stop it. It's not the best thing you put in your body. Yeah, but nothing is.
You got to replace it with something, you know, something a little bit healthier. Like, I don't know, maybe some tea?
Yeah, and then you'll never die. Except that you...
Disgusting beverage.
Yeah.
Who drinks tea?
Oh, tea's not disgusting. Oh. Tea is fine.
Tea has no taste.
No, it's not.
Dogs, he's fine.
That's why you put honey in it. It's
you don't put anything in it. You drink it hot.
Ew.
I was watching the mayor of Easttown, and she's and this woman goes, would you like a cup of tea? And she says, yes. And I said, I've never entered a home where they offered me tea.
Yeah.
My only problem with the mayor of Easttown, because it's a great, great show, is they tried too hard to make Kate Winslet like a disgusting, like, Pennsylvania woman.
I always imagined her farting.
Well, that was the thing. It was always like, did you just fart? Ah, I totally fatted. You fatted? Why do you keep fatting? And it was like, hey, you know what? Listen, you're not gross enough, Kate Winslet. We need you to take an entire bottle of Cheese Whiz and just jam it on this cracker and shove it in your pie hole.
Or
let's make you a real filthy animal.
Or give you a steak and cheese where they haven't melted the cheese so it looks even grosser than it
right.
Hollywood.
Did you get that from the Wawa? I mean, it was like they really, like, it would be one of those things, like, if you were watching a show about Boston and everyone's like, Dunkin' Donuts, kid! Like, I can tell by people who live in Pennsylvania, like, all right, a Wawa reference, I get it. Wawas in Pennsylvania.
They all nailed the Pennsylvania accent. I was very excited that it was not set in Boston.
Did you watch the end of that episode, the final episode?
I thought it was unnecessary. I liked the show.
It was great.
My wife really liked the show. I didn't think the twist at the end was necessary.
I thought it was great. I thought it was great.
It didn't bother me, but I wasn't like on the edge of my seat. I was sad. Once they found the girls, I was satisfied. That was, and then everything else after that, I didn't really care.
I said, it's one of the few shows, it's so well written, it's one of the few shows that about 60 to 70% of the cast members, I thought, did it.
Oh, and that's me.
And that's a great show if you can do that. Like, red herrings everywhere. Usually I can call it out from the beginning, but that, man, that show was great.
Because you started thinking, why is this guy even on the show? And there's got to be a reason.
Yep.
Well, there's this show, The White Lotus, which is on now, which there's one episode left. And my wife watched it, and now I'm watching it. And it's fascinating because nothing has happened. And there's one episode left, but you know someone dies. And there's one episode left, and you still don't know who dies. But I'll find out because I spent 5 hours watching something where literally one thing has happened. Okay. There is a gay scene, though, where there is a butt play.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right.
Brian, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Morning, guys. First time, long time on the morning show. I drink 12 cans of Coke Zero a day, or like 2 2-liters a day. No, Diet Coke, it does taste bad. Coke Zero is way better. But this woman complaining about 3 cans of Coke Zero, that's like breakfast for me every day.
It's
31
like,
years old.
It's like
perfectly healthy. My wife is sitting here in the car with me. She's rolling her eyes at me. She told me to go to the dentist. Dentist said, I drink like 8 cans a day. 10's great. I go to the doctor. My primary care is a gastroenterologist. He's like, yeah, nothing's going to happen to you. He drinks 8 or 9 cans a day. All it is stress relief. And I'll tell you what, most of the people that criticize me for drinking all this Coke Zero are just ripping cigarettes, 4 or 5 at a time, pack a day. And they're like, wow, you're going to die an early death because you're drinking something that's basically just flavored water. It's absolutely asinine. Everyone should drink Coke Zero. It's the best thing that's ever been created.
Do you know why? You know why people die for the most part at an early age is accidents and genetics. I mean, that really. I mean, your genetic makeup is you're pretty screwed. You can get screwed, or you can live. You can smoke and drink every day and live forever. A lot of it is your genetic makeup. Don't worry so much about your Diet Cokes in life. I mean, can you imagine this chick walking into rehab? yeah. I was drinking, you know, Listerine in the mornings, and
it's
I was stealing money from my kid, and I just knew I was blind drunk, and I broke my kid's piggy bank, and broke into a liquor store. Yeah, I'm having 3 DCs a day. I don't know, my stomach's acting up. All right, lady, shut the F up. The New York Times publishing that, but they have to fill a lot of space. I will tell them that. All right. We will be back in just a moment.
Toucher and Rich.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.